Warning, this episode contains explicit content. Please proceed with caution. What's up, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Whiskey Sex Talk. We are your hosts, Romeo.
Kim.
Kim, how's it going?
Good, Romeo. How are you?
Good. Good morning to you, by the way, and good evening
Thank
to
you.
Me.
And good evening to you, I was just going to say.
Can I just tell you that I love that we switched our recording to Mondays? Because
yes.
I feel like I start the week on a good note, even though here in Israel, we start the week on Sundays.
Uh-huh.
The week is the first day of the week is Sunday. But anyways, regardless, I love it because, ladies and gentlemen, in the past, we were actually recording on Wednesday. And, you know, Wednesday is always kind of like a busy day for a lot of people.
Right. And it's also, for me, I work with a lot of industry colleagues and Monday and Tuesday are the industry, days off, generally speaking. So I'm always, Wednesday is always when everything kind of ramps up. So, yeah, I feel just the way you do, Romeo. I like starting my week on with our recording. It's so much fun. It's like a great note to start the week on.
Indeed. And I just want to congratulate you because I believe you told me that you recently got hired to do corporate events. And this is what you do. That's actually exciting.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Exuberancy, which is a corporate, they're kind of corporate wellness, and they evolved into, team building exercises during the pandemic. And they have brought me on as an independent contractor/vendor, which just means, an independent contractor. And to do whiskey tastings for them. So I'm very excited. That's also a great start to the year.
Well,
it actually kind of happened before, end of last year, but yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. And we talked about, I remember this. But you know what? They picked the right person. And any of our listeners, Kim is for hire. She can definitely do private tastings. She can do events. She is legit, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, if you haven't noticed, she knows her shit.
Thank you. Well, I would hope so after, as we've discussed, I'm a certified whiskey ambassador and a certified gin ambassador through the British Innkeeping Institute of Glasgow, Scotland. So I would have to, I would hope that I would know my stuff.
I mean, but also you're also the president of Women Who Whiskey, the Los Angeles chapter. So
that's true. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky to be very passionate about my work.
Oh man, it's amazing. I like that you are so passionate about it. I'm actually excited, like all episodes, I'm excited because today we're going to be continuing our Nordic, journey. And today, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be talking about Danish whiskey. So Kim, when did whiskey distilling in Denmark start?
Jesper Paulsen was a farmer. He was a strawberry farmer and making strawberry wine. And in 2005, they started making whiskey because he's a farmer. So he's, growing malt barley. And their first whiskey came out in 2000.
So, Kim, when did whiskey distilling in Denmark start?
Well, as we've discussed with our other previous Scandinavian whiskeys, Norway and Sweden both had government-run monopolies on selling whiskey, which hindered the start of distilling in both those countries. Denmark is the third of our Scandinavian trio, and we'll have a couple more Nordic whiskeys, coming up in the weeks to come. But so a farmer named Jesper Paulsen was a strawberry farmer, and he was making strawberry wine. But he also, when things started opening up, Denmark in 2000 was named a wine country. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of opened the doors for malt whiskey as well. He's as a farmer, he was also growing malt barley. And so he started to still, you know, they had a pot still on the property, and he started distilling. And the first whiskey was in the early 2000s. And that was the first Danish whiskey. And there have been a couple of, real major innovators soon after that.
Thank you so much for that, because I just want to comment. I actually did research. And wow, what a huge mess, but the fact that there's that monopoly, the government has a monopoly in the product and out with alcohol. I was reading about it, and I was like, wow, they have, I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong, one of the strictest, or at that time, I don't know if it's relevant now, but from what I understand, it was that whole region, like the Nordic area, they had really heavy restrictions with alcohol. I mean, it's unbelievable. The closest I've ever come to that, and what do I mean by that is, I spent time in the East Coast in the summers, and I didn't know that, was it Connecticut or Massachusetts, that you cannot buy alcohol on Sundays.
Yeah, there's a lot of East Coast, in East Coast states in the U.S. where you can't buy whiskey on Sundays, or you can't buy it. They're still dry states. So, yeah, it's kind of shocking. I mean, the temperance movement really did a number on the whiskey industry. I mean, and that was especially true in Norway and Sweden. I mean, even recently when there was an attempt to kind of change the laws, the temperance movement was like, people are going to die if you adjust.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, I read that. I was like, that's a little extreme. But, what's interesting is that although, the state alcohol monopoly was given up in 1973, from what I understand, when Denmark joined the European Economic Community, that's when things kind of began to slowly move forward, I want to say, when it comes to the whole alcohol.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, I mean, they they had fewer restrictions, and I think it was possible for more innovation to happen. They weren't quite as hampered. I mean, there's also in the late 1990s is when whiskey. People started drinking whiskey around the world. So, not just in the US. So it was obviously Scottish whiskeys were already available, but people started, kind of launching into countries that didn't have a whiskey history or kind of launching into it. And of course they had distilling histories because most of the Scandinavian / Nordic countries have aquavit, so it's also a water of life, but it's just not aged in barrels.
So listen, what can you tell us about, what are the main Danish whiskey distilleries?
Well, Stauning is one of the giants. Okay. It was started by a group of 9 friends, and they just are the major innovators. They got a big infusion of cash, but they were doing things like they were grinding. One of them was a butcher, and so they were grinding the grain in the, where they ground the meat, and, they were just repurposing a lot of crazy things. They're one of the few distilleries really in the world that is still doing floor maltings, which means they, spread I know we've talked about, I think, this before, but that's the process of you spread the grain on the floor, you moisten it to get to trick the plant, grain to think it's going to become a plant and starts converting, enzymes start converting into sugar, which will be eaten by the yeast and, turned into whiskey. But then you have to keep it dry. So they had, they have what they called, floormen, and they're turning over the grain. And they were getting this monkey shoulders, as they were called, which is what the monkey shoulders blended scotch. Right. And but so Stonning, to avoid that, they created, they had a lot of it. They're four of the founders are engineers. So they created all kinds of innovative things, like they had just arms that were kind of turning over the grain on the floor. So very, very innovative. They got an infusion of cash, a big infusion of cash. They built stunning, stunning, you know, distillery. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the other things about, you know, being a new distillery, they can really have some fabulous architecture. Right. So Stonning is, you know, and it started winning awards right out of the gate. Braunstein is also, you know, probably, you know, one of the bigger ones, I would say second or equal to Stonning. And they also have a gorgeous, gorgeous, you know, facility. And that's an interesting story because it was two brothers, Klaus and Michael Braunstein, and they are fly fishermen and they were fly fishing in Scotland and they decided they wanted to create, you know, a distillery. And they actually bought all of the components of a brewery from Baltimore in the United States and had the whole thing shipped over to Denmark. Which is the same, you know, so they disassembled the whole thing and then they reassembled it, which is astonishing to me. And, but it's just Baltimore to you know, Denmark.
I mean, how much, I mean, just that alone, you saying that alone tells us how much like of
commitment,
commitment and funding they actually have.
Yeah, you know, because, exactly. I mean, so the, and, you know, they're also, you know, very innovative and, you know, maybe slightly more traditional than Stonning, which has all kinds of crazy finishes and, you know, very, you know, it's like, let's shake things up. Stonning is probably the second. And then there's THY, which I believe is pronounced the, but I tried to look it up and I couldn't get the pronunciation. I have a little pronunciation guide and, but a lot, unfortunately, they don't have all the distilleries in. But they are a single estate producer. So that means everything is, you know, the grain is grown on the estate. Everything's, you know, distilled on the estate. Everything's bottled on the estate. And they make some very, very beautiful whiskeys. That's a family-owned company. So there's a little bit of a theme here. Braunstein, right. You know, they're family-owned. And we're going to talk about, later I'll talk about another you know, family-owned distillery. But those, I would say, are three of the top whiskey distilleries in Denmark.
Thank you for that. I actually did a little research. I was Googling, you know, Dr. Rabbi Google. And right. Stonning, actually, yes. There's amazing content, videos from them online. And I was listening to the interview with one of the founders, and just the fact that what kind of what you were saying, like the whole process, it was founded by the nine friends or family, friends and family. And they were just talking about everything. And I was just so, I loved the video because not only that, they take a tour. The video is like 15 minutes long and they do a whole tour the distillery. And it's quite interesting and very beautiful. And I mean, just when you hear them speaking and just how much passion they have, is just, it brings a smile to my face because it just goes to show that it's not like, let's just make money here, you know?
Right, right. And not a stuffy group, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And that's really, you know, what's interesting.
Very laid back.
The Danish people have really kind of embraced the, you know, the whiskey industry. I mean, it's, they, you know, promote it and they're very involved in it. So, you know, and I think part of it is because of that kind of inclusive marketing. So,
I was going to say, and you feel that when you watch these videos, they have numerous videos. And I believe the, another distillery actually has videos up there and it was really nice and refreshing because, you know, they're talking about it and they walk you through the whole, you walk through the whole distillery just so, you know, for those that can't travel to that region.
Can't be there. Yeah. Although I have to say, The more I researched all of our Scandinavian and Nordic whiskeys, I am planning trips left and right.
Yeah, you know, I'm telling you, like, I literally was like sucked in and I was just watching these videos, but I was so impressed, really.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm saying that the other ones we've talked about are not impressive, but just the fact that they just are so, the content is there is what I want to say. Mm-hmm. And that is such a marketing tool.
Right, to
pull people in, you know?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and it's a younger, you know, a lot of younger people started it, I would say. There's a lot of families. So, as we talked about, and I think that makes it easier to kind of get that kind of thing started and, right, and off the ground.
Are there characteristics unique to Danish distilleries?
Well, they're, you know, very innovative, as we've talked about. There's a lot of Danish whiskeys have a smoked, you know, they like to smoke their barley and or their whatever grain they're using. You know, of course, there's a major sea influence again. But, you know, so there's, I would say one of the characteristics of the distilleries is really innovation. I mean, there's, you know, a number of smaller, you know, home distilleries, practically, you know, almost like craft distilleries, very small, you know, output. But, you know, there's so many people, the people who are involved in getting the whiskey industry in Denmark off the ground were younger, and they were just very innovative. It's like, we know how to sell our product, and they didn't have to depend on years of people, you know, somebody else doing it, and, you know, like Ireland and Scotland and.
Yeah, so. I believe what I read on what I know, the little that I know, when kind of like, I don't want to say the sanctions, but when, you know, this whole, when the government no longer, there was a monopoly, from what mm-hmm. I understand, the Danish, when they actually were just watching and taking their time mm-hmm. to see mm-hmm. to kind of see how things are unfolding, and but really, really specifically taking their time and really just kind of like planning out how everything's going to play out. But the purpose of that was just to kind of, they knew they were going to succeed, and that mm-hmm. they were going to just, you know, if they're going to do it, they're going to do it right, and they're going to take their time so they can perfect it, I guess. So that's
right. Yeah, and there's, you know, there was also a lot of farm distilleries. So a lot of, you know, home operations. So that kind of made it easier to kind of just, you know, ease into this other, you know, element. I mean, as we've discussed before, whiskey, I mean, many spirits are basically what they call value-added farming, which right. is, you know, you either let the barley rot or you do something with it. You either let the apples rot or you do something with the rye, you know. So the end result of that is bottled spirits.
Now, does Danish whiskey have a special taste profile?
Well, I mentioned there's a lot of interesting smoking of the barley and the other grains. One of the things that's interesting is they use a lot of innovative casks. So it's not just American oak. They're using beech and, you know, other interesting casks, which, you know, provide, you know, very interesting flavors. I mean, they have, like, Stauning has a whiskey, Chaos, I believe it is. And it's very, you know, it's more traditional with, like, bourbon notes. But then they, you know, they have some crazy whiskeys that are just out there. I mean, all of the distilleries do. They're not afraid to, you know, innovate and
experiment, really.
Say, yeah, I mean, yeah, just like, what can we do? And they're not limited, you know, as you know, Scottish and Irish whiskeys are, by having to age in a certain kind of cask. So they have a lot of latitude to, you know, really innovate and just kind of do whatever they want. And, it, you know, the thing is, again, as mentioned, the Danish drinking population is so passionate that they really support them. So they're not like, well, that's not traditional, is my take, you know. So they are just embracing anything that comes out. And there's a lot of Danish pride, you know, national pride in the whiskey. So, yeah, it's a very lovely, you know, system, I think.
You know, just listening you say talk about all this and you know, what I love is the fact that they are really, really moving forward. They are, mm-hmm. and I love that they are willing to experiment and willing to go in that direction. They're not in this like box. They're not boxed. They don't want, it seems, I love the fact that they just are not going to like be, we're not going to do this the conventional way, you know, like how exactly. it's done in the past. They're paving the way for really for anybody or any other distilleries in the world to really start and really just go in that direction, because, you know, that's how we discover amazing tastes, mm-hmm. you know, in general.
Well, and also when you think about Scandinavia, you know, architecture and design, right. I mean, there's, you know, very, obviously very cutting edge for many, many, many decades. And, you know, it's similar with the whiskey. I mean, the other countries that we've described, Scandinavian countries, you know, Sweden and Norway, I mean, they're also very innovative. Right. I mean, so really Scandinavian whiskeys are, you know, they're very cutting edge. I mean, you know, for people who are like, I only like single malt scotch, you know, and you know what a single malt scotch right. fan I am. So, you know, I'm not trying to dog anybody for being a single malt scotch, but these new innovative, you know, whiskeys and techniques are just really exciting. And I think they're pushing the rest of the industry into other directions, new directions.
Well, it goes back to what you were saying. I think when it was, you mentioned it in the episode of Swedish Whiskey, that you were having a conversation with one of your colleagues and mm-hmm. he was talking about where is our attention going to be focused in the near future? And he said like right. the Nordic whiskeys. And right. I can understand now what he meant, because what I'm learning right now through what you're saying and what I'm reading is like, uh-huh. they're really just like, mm-hmm. they're hands-on completely in a way where I haven't seen that elsewhere.
No, I mean, you know, it's interesting because you know, we've covered world whiskeys, mm-hmm. You know, Australia, New Zealand, India, Taiwan, and those were all they're all amazing whiskeys, but they were really made in the style of single malt
right,
scotch. That was their, you know, what they used as the standard. But they are, I mean, the Danish, well, Scandinavian distillers in general, and, you know, the Danes, now that we're talking about them, are really, I would say, just, you know, like, well, yeah, we love that. And then let's see where we can take it. So, yeah, there's just all kinds of innovations.
Talk about women in the Danish whiskey industry.
Well, I couldn't find a lot of them. But again, you know, it's one of the, I was talking about family distilleries, and there is, you know, the whiskey, which is the single malt estate. So that's, they were farmers.
Can you repeat that
my
again? I'm sorry. Can you start all over from that? Go. Mm-hmm.
So women in the distilling industry in Denmark, we had talked about the fact that there are a lot of farm distilleries or distilleries that, you know, came out of farms. So the whiskey is a farm. And, you know, my understanding was two brothers and two sisters, so siblings. And then one of the most exciting little distilleries that is producing this little distillery. They have a very, very small output, and they smoke their whiskey using nettles, and it's called Fairy Lochan, Farylochan, and it's a mother and three siblings. So Anne Jorgensen is the mom who was smoking things with nettles when these kids were growing up, and they would all go out and collect nettles together, and they still do. And so Anne is the proprietor and the president. And then the three kids are involved as vice chairman and, you know, co-proprietors and, you know, board members. And it's one of the smallest distilleries in the world. So what that means is they have to, basically most of their whiskeys are distributed through independent bottlers like Barry Brothers and Rood, or that whiskey boutique company. And, you know, a lot of these whiskeys, by the way, I think we've mentioned this before, but can be found at the Whiskey Exchange, or Friends at the Whiskey Exchange, which, you know, ship internationally. But I just love that, you know, that that there's these family members who are just kind of starting whiskey distilleries with their farm. I just love that.
It's very romantic.
It is very romantic. Is.
Now, because we're running out of time here, but what are your Danish whiskey recommendations?
Well, obviously, I would love to get my hands on anything Stauning. I mean, I'm saying get my hands on. I mean, those are readily available. One of the whiskeys that I love is Stauning has this Chaos, K-A-O-S, and because they don't have, always have the money supposedly for fancy labels, you can buy a bottle and they send you a gold pen that you can make your own label on.
Oh, I love that. That's really amazing.
Yeah. See, they're so innovative. And, you know, that whiskey is probably one of the more traditional ones. You know, they have kind of bourbon notes and bourbon casks, but I just love the idea that you can personalize your own label. It's kind of like what we do at Bar Jackalope, you know, with our bottles.
Oh, that's
right.
Right. Cause you get those like, you know, their
little tags,
they're little tags and you add it to your bottle.
Everybody gets to get very creative with what they call things.
So, anyway,
I love that. I'd love something, you know, one of the single estate, you know, malt whiskeys. Those are single malts. And of course, anything from Fairylaken, because who doesn't want a smoked nettle whiskey? So I want to find that.
All right. Well, listen, Kim, thank you for that, because I feel that, you know, it can be overwhelming sometimes when it comes to whiskeys, picking a whiskey. Like I talk about this all the time. I'll go to Hermitage and I'm just like staring at the walls. Literally, I mean the bookcases, I guess. And I'm just like, I'm literally thinking like, what do I want or what do I want? You know, it can be overwhelming, right. And sometimes you just kind of, I have to talk to the guys there, and luckily they know their stuff, and I'll be like, hey, what do you guys recommend? Because I want something like this, something like that. And what I love about people who know their whiskey is that they'll ask you questions, you know, like this is good, this is that. If you're starting off, try this. If you like this, if you're a little bit more, you know, you like pita, do this. If you like something sweet, try this. What I'm saying is that, you know, when it comes to whiskeys that we haven't heard of, like it's always good to kind of just get a recommendation from someone that really knows, because like I said, it can be overwhelming. And if, you know, love that you give these recommendations, because anyone can go to a store and be like, you know what? I want the $300 bottle.
Exactly.
And that really, it doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I just want to, and I mentioned this before on our podcast, but other, you know, episodes, but, you know, liquor store personnel are your friends. They're not just going to be pushing they're going to tell you about interesting things. And also, don't be afraid to go to bars and say, what's interesting? What do you think is like an interesting spirit to try?
Right.
Bartenders love that.
And I think the most important thing, what you said, is like they're your friends, but really have the conversation. Like, and there's this level of intimidation that people feel like, oh, you know, if I'm going to talk, I don't want to sound dumb. Just ask. Hey, listen, I don't know. And it's really good, because it's just, you just got to try them, really. And that's how you find out what you like. I mean,
yeah. And, you know, tell the distillers, I mean, tell the, you know, liquor stores, or tell the bartenders, oh, I heard about this whiskey on Whiskey Sex Talk and I'm interested to try it, because, you know, they should know that there are people out there recommending them and recommending that they talk to bartenders.
All right, Kim, thank you so much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for today. We are your hosts, Romeo
and Kim.
Till next time. Bye.